This episode of the Epic Film Guys is brought to you by Studio Headphones. They recently sent me a pair of their over-the-ear Regent 2 model. They are super bright white, and Justin loves that they blend in with my wall, so it just looks like my head's caving in. These headphones are absolutely amazing. Impeccable clarity, 24 plus hours of active battery life, 20 days of standby life, and the depth of sound quality that you get out of these headphones is probably the best that I've ever had in a pair of headphones. Connects to any device that has Bluetooth, so the podcasters that we have that listen to the show, I will just listen to tracks for editing purposes while I wander around the house, go to do the dishes, whatever else the case may be. They just look absolutely amazing. Studio wants to revolutionize the way people see headphones, not just as a tech device, but also as an accessory. Currently, the headphones market can offer one of two things, style or tech. Fashionable headphones tend to lack the proper sound quality, and high-tech variations are bulky and not design-oriented. Studio wants to bridge that gap while emphasizing their modern Scandinavian design. They provide a product that matches the quality of even the highest-rated headphones on the market for a fraction of the cost. And right now, Epic Film Guys listeners can get a discount, 15% off, by using the code EPICFILMGUYS. Head to studio.com, there'll be a link down in the show notes, and get yourself some headphones. Again, 15% off for the code EPICFILMGUYS. Thank you so much to Studio for sending me the headphones. These are absolutely amazing, and I'm going to recommend them to everybody. If you love headphones, you need to get these. I promise you will not be disappointed. Gentlemen, and welcome to a brand new Monday.
So
I like how you just slipped that right in there, nice and smooth, right behind me. Just like I already put one slab of butter on it, and you just came through and spread another one. So now it's nice and thick.
Ooh, butter! I'm gonna miss butter
and juicy.
Butter anymore.
That's a lot.
Apparently,
you can't
have putting way too much butter. I was putting way too much butter on my steak. I did not reveal my blood work test results on the show publicly, and I don't plan to now either. But I can tell you that I am making some slight changes to my carnivore diet. I'm still carnivore.
Did the doctor tell you that your heart wasn't going to explode?
No. Everything was actually really good, if not better than it's ever been. Except for one little thing, which is very important.
I'm going to guess cholesterol, probably.
We'll talk about it when we get there. Yeah. I'm working on something that I'm going to change, and then I'm going to see, because we're not going to get into like a huge health discussion on the show, but do want to publicly, to all of our listeners, thank each and every one of you that did participate in the Epic Film Guys Fitness Challenge for the month of January.
Some
of you were kicking major ass in there.
Major ass. And a huge shout out especially to Brad and his wife. Brad and the Cinema Guys, they started a whole other podcast just to track their fitness thing. I'll Get a Burger, it's called. Brad lost, I think, 24 pounds in the month, which is amazing. He and his wife did a whole 30. Like, I know that they're getting and gearing up and to do 5Ks and stuff like that. Scott LaVar crushed hashtag drop the sugar, like did not touch any sugar whatsoever, which is absolutely amazing. I like really pushed put the hammer down at the end of the month to push myself harder. I got my blood test results back, Justin, and my doctor was like over the fucking moon because I hadn't seen my
doctor in
like a year probably. Like last time I saw my doctor, I was way, way fatter and way, way less healthy. So like when he's comparing all of my like my cholesterol, like my blood pressure, my blood sugar, everything, like, dude, everything was so much better. Like he was like literally over the moon. But yeah, thank you so much to everybody out there who participated in the EFG Fitness Challenge. I decided, Justin, I'm not going to raffle off random prizes to random participants. Everybody who participated in the EFG Fitness Challenge is going to get a little something. I haven't decided 100% what it is yet. I'm going to make that decision sometime this week or this coming weekend and get that ordered. And then, yeah, literally everybody's going to get a little something just to thank them for taking part in the EFG Fitness Challenge. Because you all, like, literally, the fact that you threw in on this event, whether you participated a lot or whether you participated a little, whatever the case may be, I know a lot of people really, really worked their asses off. And we're really, really proud of you guys for taking charge of your health, taking charge of your life, and working really, really hard. So thank you guys so much. And Justin, we've been rambling about health all this time. You know what's going to happen now.
Now you're going to die.
Yeah.
I mean, it's entirely possible.
Shut him down. Just cut him right out of there.
The healthiest people drop dead. But I did want to say, Loy Sauce, you ain't getting shit because your ass didn't participate in the challenge at all because you're a lazy asshole.
You got to squirt that freely.
The youngest of the show, and no excuse, and he didn't anything.
I have plenty of excuses.
That you're lazy. That's the only excuse you could possibly have, because all those other people work just as much, have families, kids, dogs, animals, lots of other things, and they made time to do it. So any excuse is a bad excuse, and I'm going to publicly shame you for not doing anything.
Justin, do you remember when we went out last night and I got that big plate of chicken and waffles and fries?
Yes, I'm going to post the photo of you eating that meal in the Hopester's dumpster, because I have a photo of you eating it. So, yes, I do remember. I have proof of it.
I need to see this because I love chicken and waffles, but it's one of those things, unfortunately, I can't have anymore. But Loy Sauce is here, ladies and gentlemen, our very own resident god of podcasting. We love you. Oh! Colby's howling for you because we love you so much. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I won't publicly shame you, Loy Sauce. I hit a plateau through January. I did not lose any weight in January, but I also didn't gain any weight in January. And I've already been making some changes to make February even better. So my fitness journey continues. Justin's fitness journey continues. But ladies and gentlemen, we are here to talk about movies on this Monday sode, amongst other things. And I'm gonna yield the floor. I gotta get out of the way right now, because Justin's got to get in here and talk about Halloween Kills, because I know his dick got really, really hard when he read those reactions. Justin, take it away.
Yes. Yeah, a couple weeks ago, someone sent me a photo of a pass that said Halloween Kills on it with the date, the time, and the theater. And I'm like, wait a minute. Already? And then I remembered that when they originally screened the 2018 Halloween movie, they did it around the same time. And they do this is, you know, a test screening to see how the audience is going to react. In the case of 2018's Halloween, they went back, they changed the ending, and they did some reshoots. Well, the word on this screening was that the reactions were through the roof, and that they basically said after the screening and the reaction cards that they got that this is the reaction they were hoping for. They just have a couple things they need to do with editing wise, but the movie's basically done. People are saying this is like Halloween 1, 2, 3, I love you 3, but 4 and Halloween 2018 kind of mixed together into one movie. They're saying it's brutal and the most emotional Halloween sequel ever. Ooh. Which is really piquing my interest level and my curiosity, because I'm like, wow, an emotional Halloween movie. I'm already in Halloween mode. I've already been listening to the Halloween scores already.
Oh my God.
I almost bought another Michael Myers mask today on eBay recorded on the show. Like, I'm literally
8 months still.
But dude, I mean, like, I have nothing else to be this excited about. And like I said, this you rarely see this kind of reaction from a test screening, especially to a sequel, a horror sequel, especially. So, Loy Sauce, I know you're just as excited, if not, well, you're not as excited as I am.
Now you're going
to die. But you're close to being as excited as I am. You read some of the reactions. What is your thought on this?
I really hope they're real and true. And
They're real.
I really hope we don't get to the release of Halloween Kills and find out that it's like the opposite of everything that was reported. I'm very much looking forward to it. I have full faith in David Gordon Green and Dan McBride and the whole team. It'll be interesting. I literally have no idea what they could do that hasn't been done a million times before. But even if it is what's been done before, it works. Well, mostly, except for Halloween 5.
It just has
5.
To be done effectively. It doesn't matter if they're treading the same ground. It just has to be done well. Like, the Halloween 2018 exactly. wasn't breaking any new ground in terms of the slasher, but it
not
was
all.
Insanely not. Effective. Like, it was terrifying. Like, Michael Myers was insanely fucking terrifying. Like, all you have to do is create that atmosphere, create an insanely, like, really good threat in Michael Myers. You're there. That's the whole movie there. You can just make that movie ad nauseum until the end of fucking time, and Justin's going to keep showing up opening night to see it.
That's right. And everybody else is too. And I mean, the last one broke, you know, box office records for October at the time. They're saying it's more visceral. They're saying the kills are more brutal. One person even commented that said that the kills are almost like old school Friday the 13th kills, which excites me a lot. Let's face it, you can't do Halloween now like you did in 1978. You can't do that kind of bloodless, only relying on suspense and tension kind of horror movie. It's just, that's not what's going to work with modern audiences. But me as a huge fan, and we had that amazing episode with James Jude Courtney, who plays Michael Myers. Now he is the new shape in these movies. We're hoping we're going to get him back to talk about his experience on the new movie prior to its release. But That's where my mind is at right now, because there's been so much word going around. Also, the word on the street, Saucy, is that they screened the new Candyman movie the same night in L.A., and I'm not hearing anything good from that screening. So I'm hoping to hear from more people, obviously spoiler free, of course. But that's another one that's coming out in June, too. So we have a new Candyman coming out, which was on my most anticipated list. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, it's always when you're so many months away from release, yet you know the studio can always get in there and tinker and toy and tool around with and play around, and you never really know 100% exactly what you're going to get out of it, you know?
I mean, but, can the studio releasing that Call of the Wild movie with Harrison Ford go in and, you know, remove the CGI dog and put a real fucking dog in the movie? I mean,
that movie looks awful.
That movie is...
The whole thing is wash and CGI green screen. Like, it just, they got Harrison Ford to get in the studio and just shot everything against a green screen. It looks awful.
Yeah, I'm not
there's
sure.
There's no what... wild to be called.
How much you want to bet that he phones in the entire movie?
I would not doubt it.
Yeah.
Is this his prep for Indiana Jones 5? Because... Dude, Disney came out again today and said
no one wants that movie either.
They confirmed it's happening and Harrison Ford is in it. It's not a reboot. So yes, Indiana Jones 5 is happening.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade ended with the character riding off into the sunset. Do we really need to see a 95-year-old Indiana Jones running around?
No. He ain't 95.
The problem, we talked about this when before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about Terminator Dark Fate and how 20 years of franchise fatigue and a bunch of bad movies soured that franchise for everybody. So no matter how good Dark Fate was, you just couldn't get audiences to turn out for it because they refused to stop tying it to the old properties. The same thing is true of Indiana Jones. Everybody hated Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Nobody wants to see anybody else play Indiana Jones, mind you. Nobody wants to see anybody else step into the role, but nobody wants to see Harrison Ford come and like legitimately, like, what is his wheelchair going to be made out of, whips and fedoras, or like, what, like, I mean, seriously, like, how what about, the fuck can this character how about, even do
how about we create a new action hero?
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. Or, you know, like, what, like, whatever. Put him in the film and have him hand off, like, kind of what they're doing with No Time to Die. Have him hand off the reins to somebody young that can take the franchise and kind of keep going with the same spirit of it. And just don't recast somebody as Indiana Jones. Like, you can stay within these franchises. You can stay within these properties and make films that are respectful of them and make films that are in the same capacity and in the same wheelhouse. You don't have to just keep rebooting and reinserting the same character over and over and over and over again. Just retire his ass. Just be okay. Indiana Jones is gone.
I mean, I guess we can have Harrison Ford for all the close-ups and then have a stuntman do all of his running and jumping.
Oh,
and
God, I hope not.
Whipping, and we'll see. Yeah.
Are we going to get some Irishman like de-aging kind of stuff where we're going to get him like, you know, T-Rex arming a golden idol somewhere, like doing like an old man run, but it's a young Harrison Ford face on like running out of a tube or something. Oh, God.
I just don't understand, man. Ugh. Someone tell me, when we were growing up, when you watched a movie where there was a dog in it, there was a real dog. Like, who the fuck is going to buy, like, even a little kid when they go to see this The Call of the Wild movie with their grandfather? Because you know that's who's going to take these kids to see it. What kid is going to buy the CGI dog? It doesn't even look real. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, I don't.
Put a real dog in there.
I don't.
What was it, Brian? Was it that one dog movie where, like, it kind of, like, shut everything down for Hollywood because they had the dog in the water and it was, like, some big
purpose.
That's right. Well, whatever.
Or was it a dog's journey? Or was it a dog's way home? Who knows? Who cares?
None of that shit is Homeward Bound 2, The Journey Home, so whatever the fuck that's called. But that's a masterpiece in dog cinema. Ain't nothing ever going to beat that.
Homeward Bound 2 was the one where they were in San Francisco.
That's correct, yes. I forgot that. Well, Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey is the first one, right? That's right. Okay.
Yes.
So,
I mean, we're spending all this time talking about animals, so I feel like I have to just take the opportunity to segue into my thoughts on Doolittle.
That's a perfect segue.
It's
Nick, what did you think of Doolittle?
And this was by request, so I was not going to watch Doolittle, ladies and gentlemen. This movie is 100% not my fucking wheelhouse. This is Disney, like rated PG, starring Robert Downey Jr., wasn't it? Yeah, it was.
It's Universal Pictures.
Oh, whatever. Who the fuck cares? Anyway.
Shut up!
I don't give a fuck.
No! Wrong! Now shut the fuck up and let me do my job!
This was, you know, by request, Scott Lillehog requested that I go see this movie just because he wanted to hear me rant about this movie. This is, I think I remarked before we started recording that this is the laziest screenwriting I have literally ever seen. This is a movie made for 4-year-olds, not 5-year-olds, not adults, not anything but 4-year-olds. You park a 4-year-old in front of Doolittle, they're going to have the time of their life. You got a whole bunch of CGI animals talking and jumping all over the place and doing all these ridiculous things, telling all these silly jokes. There is a scene in the movie where John Cena plays a polar bear and he makes a joke about his dad leaving for like a pack of seals and then never coming back. Like, instead of like, my dad left in the middle of the night for a pack of smokes and never came back. Like,
that's kind of funny.
No, it's fucking not. Like, that's the kind of humor.
Look, he left. He left.
Well, because Loy Sauce would probably love this movie. He's going to go see it, and he's going to absolutely love it. But that's how lazy the writing is.
There's a dragon
in
it.
Yeah, there's a dragon in this movie. Spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen. Robert Downey Jr. has to shove his arm into a dragon's ass to pull blockage out of it, and then the dragon farts on him. I knew Loy Sauce was going to laugh. I was just fucking waiting for it. God damn it, Loy Sauce. Like, it's like I said, you park a 4-year-old in front of this movie, it'll be fine. But like, the kid that's in the movie is just a giant fucking waste of space. The kid literally is like a vacant expression the entire fucking time. Robert Downey Jr., I'm sorry, he's terrible in this movie. He's more cartoonish than the animals. Like, he's like one of the only actual real elements in the film. Like, he's an actual person amongst all this CGI nonsense. He's more cartoonish the entire time. The accent that he's doing is so ridiculous. You can't even understand what the fuck he's saying half the time, first of all. It's so over the top, and this thing is like a brisk 85 minutes. It tries to develop like this emotional story beat with the quickest, stupidest throwaway prologue ever. Like, oh, this happens, and then his wife dies. The end. Like, ba-dum-bum-bum. It's just, it's so lazy. Like, there's a film here where you could have fleshed this out. I said before, you could have either made this animated. Animated, this would play way, way differently because it would look as cartoonish as it is, and it would feel sillier and feel more fun. It doesn't feel fun, though. It feels dirty and grimy and stupid. And I fucking hated
dirty
it.
Dirty and grimy.
It's so stupid. Fucking bad.
There's a critic quote that's going to go up on the poster.
It better be on the fucking Blu-ray case.
So I've heard that this was a huge production disaster. Like, they delayed the film almost a full year. The budget ballooned up to something ridiculous, like $175 million.
Yeah, they probably paid half of it to Robert Downey Jr.
So do you get the sense when you watch this film that, like, it's a film that went through a lot of reshoots, or you could tell that there was like fights over creative control behind the scenes? You know, do you get that sense when
there's a perfect allegory for this? When I think of Arrested Development, and there's a, maybe in the show, she makes movies, she tricks her way into being a producer on a film set, and she keeps remaking and doing this movie, and they just keep telling her to cut more and more out of the movie to try to make it marketable and to try to make it like viable in a theater. I almost feel like that's what happened to this movie. I really had to go far for that Arrested Development tie-in. I'm sorry, but like, I feel like that's what happened here, because there's the story for this film is so threadbare. There's nothing, like I said, if you're four and you just want to see animals doing hijinks, park a four-year-old in front of it. But again, you could have just made an animated movie for a lot less and not had to pay Robert Downey Jr. all this money to star in this movie. Like, it feels like the whole thing just got eviscerated in editing. It feels like I said, writing-wise, it's just terrible. You're probably right, Loisos, probably way too many hands in this cookie jar. It's just, it's devoid of anything fun. Like, it's not like one of those family films where the adults are going to sit down and the adults are going to get something out of it, because the actual plot and, like, the adult relationships and even the human relationships, they're just not there. They're just not there. They're so surface level. There's no depth. There's nothing tangible to them. You're supposed to care because you get like a 30-second explanation that his wife dies at the very beginning of the movie. And he's a shut-in. Like, he refuses to leave his estate. He's a shut-in. He stays in his estate. He never leaves until 5 minutes into the movie. These kids show up at his mansion and they're like, hey, you got to go help the queen. Okay, up and out he goes. Like, that's how fucking dumb this movie is. There's no conflict. There's no like tension or anything. It's just boom, 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 push as fast as you can and have these animals just do dumb jokes. I don't know why this wasn't just animated. I feel like this would have played way, way better, and you would have gotten audiences to go see this thing way, way more than they are if it were animated. I'm giving it like a fucking four. It's not good. It's, if, like I said, if you have a four-year-old, when it comes on VOD, park the four-year-old in front of it. They will have the time of their life, but please, whatever you do, do not look at the screen. You will lose brain cells with every fucking second you watch this thing. It's terrible. Terrible.
Wow, you gave it a higher rating than Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Yeah, because Jay and Silent Bob Reboot disappointed me a lot. This I hated more, but I wasn't expecting to like this movie when I went into it. Like, I am not the Robert Downey Jr. fan that most people are. I expected him to at least be good, but like, that's the biggest problem, is he is more cartoonish than the animals. I shit you not. He is so fucking over the top. It's ridiculous.
I heard he has an outrageous accent. Is that true?
The accent is terrible. You can't even understand what the fuck he's saying half the time. It's absurd. Oh, no. I kid you not. He's surrounded by CGI animals, and he is the more cartoonish character amongst them. It's ridiculous. And it seriously has a scene where he shoves his arm into a dragon's ass and it farts on him. That is the level of humor you're lining up for in this movie. So if that's your level of humor, or if you're four, there you go. Scott Lilahawk, you're welcome. I hate you. Fucking goddamn it.
You're not my dad.
Like, you can watch the trailer and just get, like, the accent and how ridiculous his accent is. Like, yeah.
Well, I notice in the trailer, he doesn't really speak in the trailer. They show him. They show Robert Downey Jr., but he doesn't really have many lines in the trailer when he's talking.
He's legitimately more cartoonish than any of that. So, gentlemen, what do we want to do? Do we want to run into a break, or do we want to talk about the trailer for probably the only thing that's more cartoonish than Doolittle, which is the trailer for Fast 9?
Nick, it's actually just F9 now.
Oh, God.
They don't even bother with the Fast and the Furious or anything like that. It's just F9 or F9.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do some epic previews.
In the world of Endicott, New York and Herndon, Virginia, two epic film guys dissect the latest movie trailers in a segment we like to call Epic Previews.
So the trailer for F9. John Cena puts his arm in Vin Diesel's ass because he can't poop and he farts.
Dude, I gotta say, the posters for this movie are the most lackluster, the most generic, the most boring. There's like colored smoke behind each character.
Ooh. I don't think the posters even make any kind of sense. Like, what is that smoke supposed to be? Where is that coming from?
I don't see any colored smoke in the trailer unless I missed it. Am I wrong? Am I right?
I don't know. But you do see what appears to be Vin Diesel catching a car. Did you see that? There's a part where a car literally flips over. And Vin Diesel's on top of another car, and it looks like it crashes right into him, but it looks like he's like holding his arms out to catch it.
Maybe he's got like, what maybe is he that? Borrowed the superpowers from like Hobbs and Shaw, like the bad guy that Idris Elba's character had in that. Maybe he got those superpowers somehow.
Make no mistake, these are superhero movies now.
Oh yeah, easily. Yeah.
I mean, it was like that with the seven, you know, even way back in the fifth and sixth and seventh movies. Like, there's no pretense anymore. They're superheroes.
No, it's just it literally is just an excuse to film the most ludicrous and outrageous stunts that they can possibly think of, because somebody, like, they're sitting in a room pitching ideas back and forth, and like, you know, it would be really cool. Like, if a car drove off of a cliff and then, like, this cable hooked up to it or some shit, like, what? I don't even fucking, like, holy God. I've still never seen a single one of these movies outside of Hobbs and Shaw. I've never seen any of the main franchise movies ever.
What's funny is if you go back and you watch, like, the first three of these movies, you can't even really connect them to what they've become now. They've totally become a whole new thing. I mean, yeah, they're superhero movies, but they are their own genre, I think. I mean, when you see a movie, you know, like the new Bad Boys, which I have yet to see, none of us have seen it, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. One of the pointers that I saw a lot of people mentioning was that movie felt like one of these movies in terms of its action and the comedy and the pacing and everything. So, yes, they're superhero movies, but I think they've kind of created their own subgenre in a way. And they're highly successful, and everyone goes to see them.
Yeah, they and make it's
the
a lot of money.
Also the only thing that Vin Diesel can do and get paid doing. So, yeah. But John Cena here showing up.
Justin, what? He's in Bloodshot. Okay.
Yeah, no one cares about that. All right. Literally no one. It's PG-13. It's an R-rated character, and the movie's going to be PG-13. So yeah, you know what, no one cares.
You know what people do care about? At least Fast and Furious fans care about this. But we have a returning character.
F9.
That's right. Han.
We have Han coming back. So in the Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, the character was introduced, and then he's believed to be killed. I mean, we you know, very unceremoniously, and so for the longest time, people, you know, the hashtag was trending, hashtag justice for Han, right? Han,
yeah,
you know, because that character was a fan favorite, and they just, you know, killed him off screen. So we never saw him die. But I don't know if it's going to be like a Kingsman
die.
Exactly. So I don't know if this is going to be like a Kingsman, the Golden Circle situation where it's like, we used science and we brought him back, or if it's going to be like, he didn't actually die. You know, we didn't
remember when they added
screen,
a whole convoluted subplot about bringing Harry back to life in Kingsman, the Golden Circle, that made that movie 4 hours longer.
Kingsman, the Golden Circle is one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yes, it is.
So anyway, I'm happy that this character is finally coming back and getting his due. I feel like it's a long time coming. It's almost like the fans are dictating what happens in these movies, which, you know, is fine for this type of movie. It's not a Star Wars, the Rise of Skywalker situation where it ruins, you know, the entire saga. But I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of these movies. So, I mean, it's good to see him back. It's good to see these characters back doing what they do.
Somebody's
going to
tell me, like, when should I start watching Fast and Furious movies? Like, when should I actually, like, baptize
myself
into the
franchise? You need to watch from
the
very beginning. You need to watch from the very beginning so you get the sense of evolution, as Justin was saying. It's almost like the Death Wish franchise where you watch the first one and it's very, it's relatively, small scale. It only deals with like street racing, and then you get to
It's very character oriented. Yeah,
and then you get to I think Fast Five was when it started to get a little bit sillier. And then by Furious 7, you had Vin Diesel driving cars out of the top of a high rise and then crashing into another high rise and silly stuff. But I think Furious 7 is a masterpiece and the best film in the franchise because it's directed by our Lord and Savior, James Wan.
Yes, whereas in this case, Justin Lin is back, who is basically, he's kind of like the helmer of these movies in a lot of ways because he's directed more of them than anybody else. He's been in the franchise since Tokyo Drift and obviously jumped in and jumped out. But I mean, his fingerprints are all over this thing and it shows. It looks just exactly like the last couple we've seen. The one thing about this movie that looks good to me, and yes, I'm the one pinpointing this, is that there's a line about a Fiero, and I fucking love Fieros from the 80s, and it looks like they made a Fiero into this souped up like missile attached thing to it, and it's like this super fast vehicle. And I was like, yeah, dude, there's a line about a Fiero, and only old people are going to get that, because all these young kids, when you go out on the road, you drive around, you're never going to see a Fiero actually driving around on the road because they weren't very well built cars. Unless you go to like a car show or an antique show or, you know, one of those car collector shows, you're not going to see a Fiero. And I, my first car that I ever drove was a Fiero. So I got a little bit nostalgic.
Ooh.
Justin, there's a part where they drive a car on a rickety ass Indiana Jones style ass bridge. And can you even believe that we've gotten to this point in the franchise?
Yes. I actually can. Yes. Especially after Hobbs and Shaw. I mean, literally that movie tried to do every single, I mean, there's a scene where Dwayne The Rock Johnson is holding onto a vehicle and he's holding like a chain or something that's connected to a helicopter just with his arm. That's it. Just with his arm.
Cause he be so strong. With this movie, yo.
He is strong. You know, he's one of the strongest motherfuckers out there. This guy is a gigantic lifter, and he's huge in the fitness industry. He even has his own, like, Mr. Olympia type event called Athleticon that's coming later this year. It's a big deal in the bodybuilding and fitness world. But you ain't going to be holding a fucking helicopter over your head. He's not a strong man. But for this trailer, though, I like that they're bringing in John Cena. John Cena has yet to have like a really good, like memorable action role. And he's got the look for it. He's got the body type for it. And he's got the charisma for it. I think he's not that bad of an actor, honestly. And, you know, we know that The Rock and Vin Diesel will not work together in these movies anymore. So he's a perfect substitute. I don't know him about him being like them being brothers or whatever, because you'd think you would have heard of it before this. Maybe
that's
we
such
didn't.
Such a convoluted
remember,
way to bring him into the franchise. Like, oh, we had a brother.
My brother.
That we never mentioned in any of the other movies. But
stop looking for these movies to make sense. Just stop it.
Exactly.
Stop it.
Well, because that's the theme about all these movies is family. If you go through these movies and take a tally of how many times they say family, I'm sure I guarantee you it's more than 200.
That's what I should do. Here's I should do a drinking game. I should do a drinking
marathon.
Game.
Yes, that's what I was exactly going to get to. Yes, let's do a marathon. That's
get all
right.
the movies, and then every time they say family, I have to do a shot. Oh, God, I'll die.
Nick, I got an idea.
You'd be dead.
I'll wait, and I'll
you
buy
would
the...
die.
The 4K Ultra HD box set, and I'll just give you all the digital codes, and then we can watch them together.
God,
you know what? I would definitely rewatch Furious 7. That shit made me cry.
I know Dan is looking forward to this movie because Dan loves this franchise.
You know what else made me cry? Speaking of Dan, I don't know. Well, I don't know if it's speaking of Dan. It has to do with Netflix.
Speaking of Dan,
I watched the Taylor Swift documentary. Miss Americana.
I'm pretty sure they did as well because Gerald made them.
And that also made me cry. I cried twice during
You know
that
what,
movie.
Gerald?
Not ashamed.
I will never watch it. So if you want to try to recommend it to me for like Nick's watch list or whatever else, I will never watch it. I promise you. I don't care. I do not care. I will never watch it.
Nick, I would highly recommend that you watch it. It's very good.
I will never watch it. I don't like, I'm not a documentary person anyway. I'm not the biggest documentary fan. I am definitely not a Taylor Swift fan, so I will get nothing out of it. I will just be sitting there like sourpuss the whole time.
The big doc person on the show, that would be me, and I rarely ever mention any of the documentaries I watch, so I may watch it. I have zero interest in her as an artist, but you know,
If I had any interest in her as an artist, like maybe I would, but like I will never watch it because I just don't care.
I think she's a fascinating subject. I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan either. I thought her last album.
Says the guy that has her CD on the floor of his car, which I step on and get my shoes dirty on every single time I get in it.
Gerald right now is getting so mad just hearing about the disrespect of a Taylor CD, just getting all muddy on the floor.
He leaves it on the floor. When I get in, it's on the floor. I don't. My shoes are dirty. I think I stepped in some of Paz's shit, too, and there's probably dog shit on it now, too.
Her last album, Lover, was very good.
Oh, my God. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to step away into a quick break. When we come back, Justin and I, and we might let Loisos talk about it for the half of the movie he saw, are going to talk about Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman. And
that's right.
Whatever. I got it wrong 7 times when we tried to record the outro for the Thursday episode. So, Loisos, what movie are you guys going to
review? No, I'm good with just the one. It's 1:17 in the fucking morning.
We're doing just the one, then. God damn it.
Yes, so we're doing just the one.
We are going to run away to a quick break.
Okay.
And we will be right back.
Hey. What's the problem?
What?
With the car. What's the problem?
Just get out of my fucking face. Who are you?
We're still in the fucking car. What's it to you?
It's my car. Now you're gonna die.
Fuck off, you son of a bitch. I do not need your fucking nonsense page. Just 2,600 followers. You are a real asshole. I have a Batman page with 56,000 followers. You can now go fuck yourself. First of all, learn to respect the vision of quality movies.
Oh, give me a break.
Phoenix is an amazing actor, yet a motherfucker says that's not the Joker. That's a guy who lost his shit, dressed up like a clown, and slapped the namesake on himself, and you like his comment. Fuck off.
We'll be right back.
John, thank you so much out there, everybody, for listening. If you love the show, if you like the show, if you are a huge fan of the show and you just want to get your dick sucked in the parking lot,
hey, try not to suck any dick on the way through the parking lot.
Yeah, I set up a joke for myself to hit the soundboard button. What about
it was good. You're getting better at that.
I'm doing my best, but yeah, head over to Apple Podcasts, ladies and gentlemen. We would really appreciate it, and we will give you Colby Mack, ladies and gentlemen.
Ow!
That's right. He will howl for you if you get over there and you give us a beautiful, amazing 5-star review. So Justin and I know we're late to the game on this, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. It's fine. We're recording late. We had a lot of stuff with the interview that we did on Thursday and everything, so we're just trying to get everything in here. But Justin and I both got the opportunity to see Guy Ritchie's The Gentlemen. Now, Justin, before we open up into the film itself, and I know Loisaw saw some of it, so we'll let him chime in. How much of the film did you see, Loisaw? Do you know?
I would say that I saw about half, maybe a little bit more than half. I can't really comment on it much other than it's very Guy Ritchie.
Double bubble.
Yeah, so Justin, I don't know if we have ever like had a conversation specifically about like, are you like a Guy Ritchie person? Are you a Guy Ritchie fan in general, like of his work, of his films?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I wouldn't come out and in a conversation and someone say I'm a Guy Ritchie fan, but I would say that the movies that I've seen of his, I've enjoyed almost all of them, minus the gigantic pile of shit that was King Arthur with Charlie Hunnam. Yeah, that was a thing that happened, and that was not anything I'd ever watch again. But again, where he works best is when he's making movies that are the Guy Ritchiest. In this case, The Gentleman would fall into that. When he tries to mosey off and do something a little bit different, a la Aladdin, he did a pretty decent job with that. We all pretty much came in and enjoyed it overall. And for some reason, ladies and gentlemen, for those listeners out there, you guys keep listening to that episode. So either you really like Aladdin or you really liked hearing us talk about it, because that episode stays in the top 10 no matter what month it is. And it's almost been a year since we released that shit. So,
yeah, that's yeah. I
don't, could you really call baffling. Could you really call Aladdin a Guy Ritchie film, though?
No.
It says directed by Guy Ritchie, but no, it's not a Guy Ritchie movie in the sense that, I mean, yeah, but like technically it is. So yes, it's a Guy Ritchie film, but it's not a Guy Ritchie film in the vein of the movies that he's known for, his style, his like trademark Rockstock, look like and Snatch, sound.
Like it's definitely a studio film in that regard, in terms of Aladdin anyway, whether he directed it or not, because you're going to get mostly the same kind of movie out of pretty much any director if you're making a live action Aladdin. But we're not here to talk about Aladdin. We're here to talk instead about The Gentlemen. And Justin, I'm going to let you open up the floor on this one. I'm going to let you kick this one off because you're a much bigger Guy Ritchie fan than I am. So I want to hear what you thought of it first.
I mean, I look at every movie the same way, whether, you know, Guy Ritchie, Steven Spielberg, Tim fucking Burton, whoever's directing it, you know, I'm just looking at it objectively and hoping it's a good movie. And for me, this movie was an absolute fucking blast. I actually had a great time with this movie. I liked all the performances, and I almost loved this movie. It's about an American who basically moves over to England. He's trying to sell off his highly profitable marijuana empire in London. And then there's like this bribery and blackmail scheme, and people are trying to steal his empire from underneath him. And there's all different kinds of cool, colorful characters to meet along the way. And I mean, I couldn't have had more fun than I did with this movie. It's witty. The action is fantastic. And it's the first movie, mark my words, this is a big deal, this is a revelation, Nick, the first movie that I actually legitimately like Charlie Hunnam in. Charlie Hunnam is good in this movie.
Okay.
Shut up!
Shut Come up! On! Dude, get the fuck out of here. I'm not even going to listen
Shut
to this.
Shut the fuck up and let me do my
Shut
job!
Yeah, and I'm not a fan of Guy Ritchie's style at all. I think that Lock, Sock, and Snatch are two of the most overrated films I have ever seen in my life, and I would honest to God slot this right in there with them. It's not that it doesn't have its enjoyable parts, and I think most of the performances are great. The biggest problem that I have with the film is the entire first act of the film is essentially just a giant exposition dump by Hugh Grant's character.
Yeah, you don't like
character.
Your narration.
It's a mix of narration, and then it's literally just like if you take that scene in the middle of Godzilla King of the Monsters where they just stop everything wholesale to just explain everything that's going on, like that's all this does instead of just letting the backstory and letting all this stuff unfold naturally, like... It has to throw all this stuff at you and call attention to itself. And it's like this weird meta film thing where it's like, oh, like you switch it over to the 35 millimeter and all, you know, do that in anamorphic. And
dude,
it's like,
that was the coolest thing about
no,
it.
No, it wasn't. It was
cinephiles.
Fucking stupid. It was fucking stupid.
No, it was
stupid.
Fantastic, dude. It's not fucking stupid.
I hated fucking.
And I think that the fact that a filmmaker will put that in there for cinephiles, for people that truly appreciate film, those of us that actually have seen movies on film, then you'd understand it.
I truly
but
appreciate
if you think it's stupid,
film. Don't
then
even give me that
I would
bullshit.
Like to. I would like to question.
It's him
your
literally
passion of filmmaking.
Himself.
If you thought that was stupid,
it's him literally
it
filleting himself.
It's literally
as a
like a 2 minute
thinking
scene.
He's like this great thing, but that's not even like the biggest problem
that
I have.
It was a cool little thing to intercut there. He's not trying to be pretentious or say anything.
I disagree. I think he's trying to be very pretentious because that's
well,
Guy
I
Ritchie
think you're
whenever
totally
he makes
wrong
these
about
kinds
this
of
movie.
Fucking movies. Because Guy Ritchie thinks in these kinds of movies, when he makes these kinds of movies, he thinks he's really cool and he thinks the dialogue is really cool and he thinks it's all got this
really
cool vibe. I disagree. I don't
witty,
think
dude.
It is at all. I
it's
think super it's
super witty.
Try hard.
Well, again, the dialogue is witty. The dialogue is hip. Because it's dealing with like the youth culture in London. So I would disagree that it's not cool because it 100% is cool. And the dialogue's fucking beautifully, beautifully done. I mean, Hugh Grant's character alone, everything that comes out of his mouth, I thought it was very, very well done. I mean, I didn't think one character in this movie was bad.
I hated Hunnam in this movie too. I hated him. Hated his performance.
Dude, it's such a subtle performance.
Terrible.
It's such a subtle. He's from there, isn't he?
Not that I know.
He's
of.
From
I don't
there.
Know.
He's not American. Is Charlie
I
Hunnam
don't
American?
Know, but I didn't like his accent. It doesn't seem real to me. It seemed like it was not right, even if he is.
Dude, he's an English actor. Yeah, he's fucking from
well,
England.
His
dude,
accent
so
sounds terrible even still. It just sounds weird. I don't know.
You're just trying to find excuses in your back
no,
pocket.
No, I'm not trying to find excuses.
And...
I didn't like his performance in this film. I like Hugh Grant gives the best performance in this film for a character that's completely fucking useless to this film until like the final 10 minutes or so. Like he's literally just an exposition dump for the entire first act of the movie. But like I said, the first act of this movie is where it has its biggest problems. Once it finally just starts letting the story itself unfold on the screen, you bring in Colin Farrell, who I think is fantastic in this movie. I love Colin Farrell in this movie.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's amazing.
You bring
They're
in
amazing,
Matthew but- McConaughey. Matthew McConaughey is fucking great in this movie. He gives a really like menacing kind of chilling performance. This film gets immeasurably better for me once you get away from that first act. The first act of it was such a fucking anchor on this film for me, though. I could not for the life of me like why they were going back over and over and over to this just endless exposition, this endless fucking backstory dump. You could have just told this story naturally. You didn't need that whole setup of it. Like you just didn't.
I found it interesting. I found it to add a great forward thrust of energy to the movie. I was never bored. I liked all that stuff. I mean, I'm not shocked that you didn't like that because you don't like that form of storytelling, no matter what director it is, whether it's Guy Ritchie or fucking Joe Schmo. It doesn't matter. That's not for you. And I totally get that. But I think this movie shines in a lot of different ways, which should not be, you know, swept under the rug just because of one fucking small portion of it. I don't know what else to say about it other than like I found every character to be interesting. I found all the character interactions to be good. Yes, and Colin Farrell is fucking amazing. One of my favorite scenes in the entire movie. He's a character called the Coach who's basically like he runs this like a boxing like fight club type thing. And he's getting food at like a deli type thing, a restaurant, and these fucking hooligans come in, you know, trying to be little badasses and he fucks them all up. And it was for some reason, it was just like seeing Colin Farrell in this role, and he gained weight for this role too, so you could tell he gave a shit about it.
He looked like he was pretty cut
so
up.
Fucking good.
Like I said, I think Grant's great in the movie. I like Grant. I think he's great, but I hate the way that the entire story was set up in the first third of it. So that unfortunately is going to be the biggest anchor on the film for me. I don't want to spoil the way the film ends or how everything kind of shakes down or plays out in the film, because it does take a nice couple of twists and turns, I thought.
Well, yeah, it's got some great twists and turns, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like it does what this kind of movie's supposed to do.
Like, ultimately, I'm going to land on the positive side of the fence with this, but just barely. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. Like, I think it's got redeeming qualities. I just don't like the first fucking act, and I'm sorry, but I just don't like Hunnam's performance in the film. I think that there are moments, like when they're in the apartments, like when they're in that one apartment they have to go get the girl, like I think like that's in, like, that, in that scene
he's great in that
he's
scene
good. I think he's great in that scene. But yeah, like all the scenes he has with Hugh Grant, like at his house, I think he's fucking terrible. And maybe that's just because Hugh Grant is so much better an actor than he is, that like Hugh Grant is like just chewing scenery, like trying to play Hunnam as the straight man.
They're two different.
Just doesn't.
They're two different. Yeah. Yeah. He is a straight man, and he's not even really saying anything. So I don't even see how you could objectively say his performance is bad. He's not really even doing anything. He's just sitting there. He says like one line every five.
It's just, it doesn't come off as genuine. It just came off as too try hard to me. Like, it just feels like he's just trying too hard instead of just being naturally in the role. You get later on in the movie, like I said, in that scene in like the apartment and stuff like that, I think he's much better in that scene, and like in those scenes and different things like that, I think he's good. I think he's really, really good. But like that whole fucking first act of the movie completely took me out of the whole thing. Took this movie quite a while to like really get me across that finish. I mean, the fact that it got me across the finish line to a passing grade is pretty remarkable for the movie's sake, so I'll give it that. Because I expected, especially after that first act, I was literally in my seat just fucking mad. I was like, this movie is going to be such a piece of shit. But it slowly, Henry Golding's fucking great in this movie too. I loved Henry Golding in this movie. Like, it won me back over. But yeah, I'm not into this. Because like I said, I feel like Guy Ritchie makes these movies because he thinks he's cool. And he thinks everything about his movies is cool. And he's like, look how cool my movie is. Here's my cool movie. Like, that's how
right.
I feel like
this movie
how
was,
he fucking makes
this movie
his movies.
This movie was cool as fuck. This is probably the coolest fucking crime movie I've watched in the last year or so. It is cool. It's hip. The dialogue is hip. It's well written. I mean, like, I would say right to his face, yeah. I mean, I don't know about him being cool as a human being, but as a filmmaker, this film was extremely cool. McConaughey oozes fucking cool in this movie. 100%. Like, he's amazing in this movie. Now, we know he can do that easily, so this isn't like, you know, a huge stretch or anything, but
it was nice to see McConaughey trying, like giving a shit again.
They're all so specific. They have a very specific look to them, a very specific sound to them. They're so individual and different from one another. And that's what I really loved about this movie.
My impression was that your mileage will vary depending on how you feel about Guy Ritchie, because the dialogue is very Guy Ritchie. It's very like, you won't mate, you fucking cunt. Like,
I'm fine with that. So, like, the dialogue in Guy Ritchie's films has never been the breaking point for me.
Well, sure. But I mean, my point is, my guess is if you're a fan of like Snatch and Lock Stock, you'll like this movie. And if you don't, you're going to be less likely to like the movie. Nick, I'm surprised to hear you giving it a passing grade because you started it off with Nick's rant. So, you know, from what I saw, great performances. Hugh Grant looks like he's having the time of his life in this role.
Yeah, he's having so much fun.
Yeah, and it goes places, especially in the third act. And again, this is without me having seen the full picture of the film, but I was shocked to see where the film ends up. It is very meta, and you can argue whether or not Ritchie is being genuine when he's talking about, oh, the whir of the projector and 35mm film, when the film is shot on digital. At least I'm pretty sure it's shot on digital. So it's like, how genuine are you being with this movie, Guy Ritchie? Why not shoot your film on 35mm film if you're going to wax poetic about how much you miss this bygone era?
Well, I think you should probably look up and see what he actually shot it on before you say anything, because it's hard to tell, because the way when you watch movies in theaters today, like at Alamo's 4K theaters, sometimes you'll see something on film that looks like digital, or and vice versa. So it's really hard to say.
I could be wrong, but at any rate, it's like in Transformers. This is not as egregious, but in Transformers 4, I think it was, where you have that character talking about like everything sequels and remakes, and it's like, well, look at the movie that you're in. Like, you're trying to point out this meta commentary on the Hollywood system.
It is like a 2-minute thing in the very beginning of the movie, and I mean, to be fair, like, he's trying to sell it as a movie, like, so I get like that whole character arc, but it just feels like
he's just explaining it in terms of it being,
I just didn't need the like meta aspect of literally switching the aspect ratio while he's talking about it. Like, I get that, like,
for some people it's like a cool aesthetic
thing. For me, it was just like I get, but like I said, that's my thing with Guy Ritchie movies, especially these types of Guy Ritchie movies, where it's just like, look how cool my movie is. And I don't like that aesthetic, because I feel like that's what he's trying to do, like trying to make a cool movie instead of just making a movie that ends up being cool, you know. And that, I'm sorry, it just doesn't work for me. But Justin, did you ever throw a rating on it?
My dick in your mouth, motherfucker. That's my ratings.
Danny's gonna spank you with the belt. It's 1:37
in the morning. Yeah, I'm gonna give the gentleman an 8 out of 10. I had an absolute blast with the movie. I liked pretty much everything about it. I have actually really very little negative things to say about it. I mean, there are some moments where it gets a little slow here and there, but I think it's a great joyride. I love British movies. I love especially British movies where they say fucking cunt, bloody fucking cunt every other word, and I just enjoy that kind of foul mouth nonsense in my movies. And I like seeing McConaughey at the center of this movie, and he's having a blast. Everyone just seems like they're having a great time making this movie, and it shows. So for me, 8 out of 10.
All right, and ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it for this Monday episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. Stay tuned for Thursday. We're going to be reviewing the latest comic book movie in the DCEU, I guess. Maybe.
Boy, oh boy.
Who even knows? With Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Miss Harley Quinn, I believe is the full official title.
You got it, dude. I'm surprised you nailed it, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it in a while, so I'm actually surprised I remembered that as well. But advanced word, according to the like advanced screenings, have actually been pretty positive. I do love that it's rated R, so I am looking forward to a nice R-rated action fucking romp. So, who knows? We'll have to see exactly.
Yeah, we all know, we all pretty much agreed, guys, when we watched Suicide Squad, that Margot Robbie was hands down probably one of the best things
easily
in that movie. She's fantastic in the role of Harley Quinn. So I mean, we at least have that. We're going to be introduced to some new characters. It's going to be, you know, female oriented, female centered, and you know, a bunch of badass chicks, which I'm all about. Also, dude, we're going to get to get Black Mask in a movie, and it's Ewan McGregor, and from what I've heard, he's chewing scenery like a motherfucker and having a blast.
Cannot wait.
I'm like, exactly. So those things, they have me kind of excited. Yes, it's a movie about Batman villain characters without Batman, which people are tending to forget. But after Joker last year, we know we don't really need Batman to be in these movies for them to be successful or enjoyable or good films all them to themselves. So we'll see.
Yeah, we most certainly will. So ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you stopping by, checking out the show once again, and we love you. Thank you so much, everybody out there, for listening. For myself, for Justin, and for our very own God of podcasting. Ow! Thank you so much, everybody out there, for listening. Until next time,
we will see you at the movies.